You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Freedom of movement, the right to privacy. Both are concepts you've probably thought about a little bit differently since the lockdowns and civil liberty intrusions that started in 2020. Even farther back if you really think about it. Well, our friends at privacypost.io have you covered of something that you're probably going to want to know about if you value both of those things. PrivacyPost.io is a privacy by default virtual mail and business center designed for the location independent, expat, and international entrepreneur community. Anyone seeking financial freedom should consider PrivacyPost.io. Their services include virtual mail, a professional business address, privacy trust services, company formation, and a Portugal D7 residency and virtual domicile in the privacy-respecting and income-tax-free state of South Dakota. PrivacyPost.io protects you from third parties, overreaching government agencies, and complicit cloud-based platforms invading your personal, private, and business information. Privacy is freedom of association, expression, commerce, and mobility. Isn't it time you took it a bit more seriously? PrivacyPost.io is your partner in freedom. Go to PrivacyPost.io for more information today.
Prepare yourself. You're on the run with Remzo W. Martinez.
Well, hello, my lovelies. This is not Remzo Martinez, but you're listening to On the Run with Remzo Martinez. I am Trisha Stewart Mann. Some of you know me from the We Are Libertarians Network. I'm a fellow podcaster on there. And I have another We Are Libertarians podcaster as well. The host of Enemy of My Enemy is joining me today on the Run, Hody Johns. Hody, how are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. It's fun to do On the Run with Remzo Martinez without Remzo Martinez.
Right? <It's> I'm pretty much the next closest thing to Remzo, right?
You and him, I can't think of how demographically you could possibly be more different.
Yes. If we were in the room, people might think we're twins. But seriously, just for a moment, Remzo did lose his voice. So he's still able to put out his content. I think he does two shows a week on there, and he has several other projects he works on. But give a little shout out and a prayer to Remzo that he gets his voice back, because obviously in this business, it's something really important. I know that our founder, Chris, lost his voice for a month, and that was really difficult. So sometimes people forget that if your voice is your way of making money, that having a cold or getting, the flu or anything can be a lot more detrimental than just losing a few days of work. So I asked Hody to come on today because I wanted to talk about something that I thought was relevant now in my life, and then just as far as like most people's lives with, the shutdowns, after the shutdowns, restrictions, inflation, and how it affects the service industry. We've talked about this before, but I wanted to touch a little bit more on the funny parts of it, because Hody had posted something on social media, which was actually Lou, his another co-host on his podcast, My Enemy, is a tattoo artist. And it was a funny, I think it was a Reddit thread, where they were talking about how people want service for free from a tattoo artist, which obviously those people are talented. They put a lot of time and money into it. And it's silly, So I kept going on this thread, and I'm sure you guys have done this, especially on Reddit. You can just go on for hours and hours. And the stories I read, a lot of them were about like the service industries. I'm a bartender. I've been a waitress as well. Part-time my whole life since I was 16. I've always done this as extra money. And I know Hody has worked in restaurant management as well as service. So after reading those stories, Hody, I know you probably dug down deep into there. What were your thoughts after reading them?
I mean, Choosing Beggars is the name of the Reddit. Like I specifically linked one for tattoo artists, but yeah. The whole Reddit called Choosing Beggars is just so hilariously funny because it's people who are trying to be choosy while they are literally begging.
Yeah.
And it is so this is the usual thing. You get a service and a product. You're not getting a slave.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's, you're not getting somebody who just does whatever the heck, you know, you say for the next little bit, you know, I mean, and the thing is when you pay by service, you're more likely to get them to do some kind of sketchy things because they want you to be happy because you pay their salary.
Right.
You pay their money, right? I don't make money without you. So we want to make you as happy as can possibly be. Now, in the case of tattoo artists, they negotiate that wage. Well, not that it even should be negotiated. Tattoo artists always say what their wage is.
Yeah.
Like, hey, it's $200 an hour or something. And then somebody will be like, nah, I'm not paying that. And it's like, okay, go to, like, I saw somebody who do it for 50. And they always say, okay, well, go to that person. Yeah. And they're like, no, but you do a better job. It's like, yeah, why do you think why do you think the $150 difference is there? Where do you think that comes from?
It is so strange. I think this is something that's like shifted culturally over, I would say maybe like the 10, 15 years, maybe a lot of people purchasing things on the internet, reading other stories, trying to price shop or something, because it's this weird sense of entitlement that you deserve somebody else's labor or product for the price that you want it, but yet you couldn't imagine doing the same thing back for somebody. Do you think that this is, you know, always been some sort of idea that people have in their heads that they're owed something for cheap or free, especially somebody that, you know, an artist or musician or maybe somebody in the food service industry?
You know, that's really hard to say. One of the most ironic things when I look at the history, because I haven't been in it forever. I was in it a little bit when I was younger, dropped out of it, eventually got into mortgage. I did some paramedics in there. And then I, when my life fell apart, I was like, you know what? I know service works. I'm going to go back to doing that. Shorter hours, more pay. I'm going back to that. It was generally a good experience. Management, not so much, but getting paid, by tips was great and everything. But when I looked at the history of it, a lot of it came about because restaurants didn't want to pay their Black employees. And this is kind of like just immediately after like slavery and kind of during Jim Crow and the bad time in American history. Right. And they said, well, we'll hire a Black employee, but we don't want to pay him like we do our white employees. And they're like, okay, well, we'll work for free then. We're just going to have your diners pay us. Mm-hmm. And what happened was the diners would pay these Black people doing the service more than what the white people were making on a flat stack salary. And so it's why, because a lot of countries, people will note, oh, you don't tip in France. You don't tip in China. It's disrespectful to tip here and there. Why did this come up in America? Well, this is actually why, because we were a flat place too. You mm-hmm. pay whatever this guy says. But they found that people were enjoying the service better when you paid whatever that service was actually worth. Mm-hmm. Now, could you go in there and just be like, I don't like them kinds of people. I don't even want to say what they would say, but I don't like them kinds of people. I'm not going to pay them. Well, yes, of course. But generally, Americans are not evil. And so we will pay what things are worth generally. And so these people would generally make more money than what the others were making. And so then your white employees were like, hey, we want to make what they're making. Okay, can you cut our salary too? Can you cut our wage too? And put us on the tip system. And that way it's like, hey, all employees here are tipped. And then sure enough, and it's one of the things that I love about it, because mm-hmm. you make high-end accountant money working shorter hours. Yeah, and yeah, are the hours sometimes more erratic? Of course. You work dinners and you get home at 9, you're not getting home at 5.
Right.
But I mean, generally speaking, for something that is considered low skill, that they will train you start to finish on the job. There is no education required. In fact, they encourage you to drop out of high school and middle school and stuff, you know, to keep that schedule wide open, please.
Yeah.
You know, we want you to train less and educate less. And for all that, the fact that you can make it there, I think it's a fantastic thing because it's a floor. Yeah. Right. Anybody can do this. It's a floor.
Yes.
Anybody.
I would say it doesn't take a genius, but I don't think anybody can do it. It takes a certain type of personality. Sure. You know what I mean? Just like a lot of sales do. You don't need a, you know, you don't need a super high IQ and a, you know, master's degree, but you definitely need to have, number one, a lot of grit and be able to put up with people talking to you like you're a low person and, you know, long hours, like sometimes bartending, which I don't take these shifts much anymore. You know, I'm getting home at 3 or 4 a.m. after I mop an entire bar, you know, and so those are really not desirable hours. And like, but like you said, you know, I've obviously worked in, residential management, property management, and then I'm an insurance agent too. And when I lost that job from COVID, I did the same thing. As soon as the restaurants opened back up, I went back to bartending because I knew it was, you know, I can work a few days a week. I can see my kids and I can make the same amount of money.
You know, the money you're going to make. It's a great floor to have. And yeah, I mean, I shouldn't have said anybody can do it because it does require a certain
spirit of what you were saying. I just always think,
it requires a certain personality. And I think it's one that you can learn, I guess, to be, you know, kind with people. I do think there's some discipline there that, I mean, and a lot of servers don't have it, and that's why they don't make it very long, but you've got to be able to deal with your bad days and realize that they will be outnumbered by good days. Like if you are giving, and I mean, this is why tip service came about. Like I said, people generally pay better. Now, when that tendency doesn't happen, when you say, man, I gave it my all and that guy tipped me nothing on that $200 check, you can have a meltdown. You can treat all your other tables bad and then make nothing the rest of the night. Or you can rally and be like, that sucks, but you know what? I'm going to pick this up. I'll be okay. And I do think that there's some discipline and some, like you said, you called it grit. I think there's a bit of grit that you need with service just because it is inconsistent. You know, if you need to know that you're making that $15 an hour no matter what happens. Yeah. You know, like then maybe serving's not for you.
Yeah.
But for those people who are like, man, I think I can make $30 an hour. You know, when things are going great, maybe I'll make 50. And then when people start stiffing me, maybe I'll have an hour where I actually make zero because that was my only table. You know, you just kind of got to roll with the punches.
Yeah. So lately, what I've noticed, and I do want to apologize up front, my executive producers upstairs, generally when I record, they are able to go somewhere else, but they're snowed in today. So you might hear, you know, some baby stuff and whatever, you know, they're just working behind the scenes. Anyways.
No worries. My dogs are choking on something right at the beginning. So I'm sure that'll be fun for everybody to hear.
And my heat is running high. I can't turn it off for this week. So sorry, Remzo. Hope you got some good filters when you edit. So lately what I noticed when I had come back, after, you know, the lockdowns and everything is that people were demanding more. And I think it's partly because, you know, people were kept inside. Also, people are more scared to go out, you know, and then at being a bartender too, I work in a pub, it's got a very large bar and then several high tops. I would say our occupancy, I think is around 100. It's has happened to me before where I don't have any help and I'm the bartender and server for 100 people.
Unfortunately, all of that is way too standard, but continue.
Yeah. So I what I try to do initially, and I find that like as a good story, most people, if you explain this upfront, say, I do apologize. I want you to know that we are short staffed in the kitchen and here it's just me. I'm going to do my best to give you the best service I can. It's easier for you to come up to me at the bar and I apologize for wait. If you tell people that initially, I would say 75% to 80% of them are perfectly fine. And actually they're much nicer. They'll come up and get a drink. They'll, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. Instead of trying to get me to come out from behind the bar. However, there are these entitled people that are angry about COVID. They're angry about politics. They're angry that their food's taking a long time. And they pretty much tell me nobody wants to work. I'm literally working when they're telling me that. So I thought we'd share some stories. my first experience when, and it's funny because this is the first place I waitress. It was called Perkins. It's like a breakfast lunch place. We have them in Ohio. I'm not sure if they're a nationwide chain or not, but
I'm going to look up their logo. I think I know.
Yes,
the place.
I was green. A waitress there when I was 16, which was great money, you know? But I'll never forget. I actually went in there with my mom and my grandma, you know, you get a discount and we were having food and our waitress was another new girl who I didn't know. And so she tells us, they ordered food, I think luncheon food or whatever. She comes back and gives us all pancakes. And my mom looks at her. She's like, oh, that's not what we ordered. I think this is somebody's order. And she goes, oh, I know, but this was so much easier for me to put in.
The server said that?
And that was by far one of the funniest. Like, we just ate the pancakes because we didn't even at that point know what to say. But that was my first, like, probably one of the funniest serving experiences. It didn't even happen to me as a server. But so I've got quite a few of those. What's your first memory of like at being a server or whatever that you were just kind of outraged by one side or the other?
Oh man. First experiences, boy, that's hard. Cause we're talking some early stuff. I was at a Chick-fil-A. And so this was my first job, in high school.
Of course it was, Hody.
And we had these big glass doors and you are eating fried chicken at Chick-fil-A. And the fingerprints on that door, I'm telling you, and they would set me up on like the cashier, the closest to the door, and just be like, hey, just when you see somebody get their fingerprints on the door, if you just wipe it off. Mm-hmm. And of course, me not knowing, I'm like, oh, okay. I'm sure very few people do that. There's a bar across there. I'm sure they grab onto. No problem. Yeah. Nobody uses that bar. Nobody used that bar. Everybody just used the hand right against it. And it's hard to blame because you don't really think about it. You're just kind of like, I'm this tall. I'm not going to reach down here to do the bar. I'm going to push it open with my hand, whatever. But I got to tell you, those big clear glass doors, it was a daily experience. If I can get a little gross on this one.
Go for it.
In the
this
same
is on the
job,
run too. So you can swear all you want, Hody. I know that's your favorite thing to do.
You may prefer swearing to what I'm about to say on this one. So this was back in an era, and I believe they have stopped doing this, but where they didn't want you to flush your tampons or pads. They have a box there on the side, little metal box. And the concept of the metal box is awful. First of all, yes, you can put a plastic bag in there, but since it doesn't go around the back, as soon as it folds in, nobody in their right mind is going to stick their hand in there to put the flap back out, right? And I got to say, because nobody wanted to clean it. Now, I'm a dude, but they would send me in there to clean it because nobody wanted to do it, right? And I got to say, like, and this is, again, no offense. I totally understand. It's a bodily function. If it happened to me naturally, I'd be just as frustrated. Don't judge women, but like, it is the most, like, if it sits in there for a day and you just clean it out at the end of the night, it is the most foul smelling. Yeah. Like, you trap the smells in, all the different pads and tampons mingle with each other.
How much did you get paid hourly?
Try to clean it out of there. I mean, that was a, so keep in mind, I am not a young chicken anymore. but yeah, I believe this was $7.25 an hour, I believe.
Yeah. So when you're complaining that nobody wants to work at Burger King, maybe, and I would say, I think they're probably paying 11 or 12 now. They're on the lower end because I know Chick-fil-A pays 16, but
good.
You know, maybe you wouldn't want to clean out the sanitary napkins for $12 an hour either.
Right. It was just, and you know, everybody has it a little differently. So some days, you know, you get the light flows, and then some days you get the people who you're like, there is probably like, I'm pretty sure I've seen a fetus in there before. And I'm just like, I don't want to. And it's, if they make it like, because it's a deep enclosed tin, it is very hard to clean out. So like, I mean, and it's one of those things, like they'll just tell you to clean it out, not like give you anything. So like, you feel bad asking for like gloves or like, hey, I need a towel that you're never going to need again. Like, can I have that? Like,
Ramzo is going to be so, so. That is awesome. No, I know, like, as far as bathrooms go.
Yeah.
So this actually just happened recently, which I've had some, I've cleaned that same thing out too.
Yeah.
So when I'm bartending at the end of the night, I close and it takes me about an hour to an hour and a half to finish my closing duties. Mind you, in that time, I'm not making any tips. So I'm making less than minimum wage to clean up your bathroom.
$2
a janitor makes a lot more than I do at that point.
Yep.
So I go in and there was some guys that I actually had to cut off, which I don't do a lot unless I feel like they're not being safe or they're driving or whatever. Most people have a ride, but apparently they decided to go into the men's restroom, take off. There's a urinal and a toilet but it's a single restroom and obviously the sink. We're a very, very clean place. They took all the handles off of it, broke the sink. So where the faucet was running and decided at that point, since nothing would be flushable, that they would use the floor because there was a floor drain.
Oh my gosh.
Ironically, the guy was so drunk, he ran out when I was trying to take his keys that he accidentally left his phone. So I gave it to my boss.
But
yeah, it was just like, that's disgusting. So, you know, most people don't do that kind of stuff. But when you work at a bar where they're serving alcohol,
yep,
it does happen more than you know.
Bars get rocky. I got to tell you, there's definitely a difference. You know, Utah, we got all these strict guidelines. We could, if you can even call what we sell booze.
Yeah, they're like, okay, you had an Amaretto sour. You can have another drink next year.
Right. That's exactly it, right? With like a half shot of the Amaretto in it. It's just so, like, it's so hard to get drunk here. I actually didn't know about the beer difference until I had a friend come over, because I've never drank my whole life. But he came over and visited me, and I bought some Blue Moons just for him, being like, hey, he's going to love this because he loves, you know, the orange ales, and drank it. Was just like, and he went through all six and was like, dude, I got to be honest with you, I feel nothing right now. Like, I am just, and that's when I found out about the difference in like the volume, and we got this shit, this extra low thing. And, but I could tell the difference. So I went from Utah to Colorado, and I've been in Washington and Texas. And I got to tell you, you can immediately tell the difference between the strong liquors and people's behaviors very quickly. I was in a very busy Buffalo Wild Wings in Colorado, and having to escort people to the exit was an at least nightly activity. I mean, it's, and it's funny, you know, and I'm sure Trisha, you can relate to this, but, you know, when people say like, well, servers make it sound so awful, but most people aren't awful. Thing is, say one out of every 500 people are awful. Well, I've had restaurants that serve 2,000 people a day. I've had restaurants that serve 3,000 people a day. So if you have one out of every 500 people, and this is a common one when I was in management, then this is, I was still in the era when the guest was always right. And I'm thankful that is ending. And maybe that's a direction we could talk about with this, because there are sometimes when the guest is not even in the ballpark of
right. And you're rewarding bad behavior and encouraging it at that
absolutely
point.
But this is an era where I had a guest. I mean, you'll have a guest, you know, ask straight up and just say like, I don't want a woman. I don't want a man. I don't want one of the Mexicans serving me. I don't want anybody over the age of 40 serving me. Sometimes they'll just be blatant and say, I want the hottest person you have as a server, you know? And is it common? Well, not if you're looking at it as like an overall sense of human beings thing, but when I serve 3,000 people on a Saturday, that will happen.
Right.
You know, 4, 5, 6 times.
Oh yeah.
And it's just like, and that unfortunately, I was in the era where you reward that behavior. You say, yes, we'll make it happen. I'll get you the hottest person. I said no once to somebody who was a blatant pedophile. And I actually saved this email. This is a fun one to share. Oh. And they were like, I asked for somebody, the youngest girl they had. And like the girls there all looked like they were over 18. And so I'm never going back there again. I'm going to this other restaurant because the girls are 14 there and they like flirt with me and bounce their boobs and stuff. And I was just like, this person's like gross. Right.
Yeah.
So we get this email in this complaint and I just dismiss it. Right. I'm just like, whatever.
You don't want them as a customer.
And my regional manager emails back and is like, hey, have you offered this person like gift cards yet to come back in? And I'm just like, dude, Keith, like, I'm not offering a pedophile a gift card to come. No, I haven't. And like, I don't like drawing lines because I try to be as, you know, nice as I can here, but there's no way, like I cannot have this person in the restaurant. I mean, and at that point I'm rewarding a bunch of racist, sexist, bigoted behaviors, but like, I'm just like, I don't, at some point I have to draw the line. There is no line for these regional managers. The line is whatever makes the complaint go away.
Yes. But I think you're right when you say, well, I've always worked for us. I've very occasionally worked for corporations in any field that I've worked in. But generally work for small business which I do like that because obviously when I go to the boss, she owns the place and she says, yep. You don't have to put up with that. But I noticed like having been a server when I was younger, obviously a female bartender, worked at some college bars, people expect you as a woman. And I'm sure this probably happens to guys too, from women or men, to act like you're more than just their server. You know, they want to give you a hug. They want to squeeze your waist. Yep. They want to kiss your hand.
More to girls, like, than guys, for sure.
Yeah, yes, I know what I'm saying. I'm just about. Saying that. I'm not saying it hasn't happened to young men. Yeah. And I have seen that because I've worked with male bartenders before. But overall, yeah. It happens to me quite a bit.
Yeah.
And we had this guy who had a tablet. And he was, for better lack of words, gross. But just didn't smell well. He would stare and then, but you know, that's fine. I'll serve you. I'll be nice to you. But I noticed his tablet was always following me around. Well, here, a friend of the owner's daughter sat down next to him and realized he was taking pictures of me every time I turned around, and he'd done it to another. And I said, if you need to put that away, that's what I'm not here for. You can't take pictures of me home with you. And it's gross. I was pregnant at the time. And I went and talked to my boss, and back in the day, they probably would have said, oh, just put up with it. It's fine. You know, whatever. She goes, you kick him out. She's like, you do whatever you want. It's your bar. Yep. She goes, you have to put up with anything. And that's really nice because it didn't used to be like that. You're right. You know, but so that's the kind of crap you put up with. So when people say nobody wants to work, it's like Ohio, our unemployment rate is back down to 4.5%, which is what it was in January of when the pandemic 2 years ago. So people do want to work. They are working. They're just not working in these places anymore. You know, I think that's important for people to know. And also, you need to be a little patient. When I say to somebody, you know, I'm sorry, it's going to be a long time. If you want speedy food, go to carry out. You know what I mean? Don't, yep. When you go to service, you're actually paying for somebody to serve you hot food and then clean up after you and give you suggestions. And so you don't have to do anything. So if you want that, you have to pay for that. And it might not be as good as it used to be, but then don't go out to eat.
Right. I mean, it's a choice that you get to make. A lot of people are like, I don't like tipping my server. They should take care of that. And I think that's the wrong attitude to have. It's a pay by performance. I want to pay for service because that ensures that it's good service.
Yes.
Believe me, I have seen places where we had to, you know, where state regulations. I've opened two restaurants in Washington, a Texas Roadhouse and a Buffalo Wild Wings. And in both of them, you know, they got rid of the service model. Now, did they officially get rid of it? No, but they made the wages so that there was no way we could pay that plus tips. So we're just like, okay. So the Texas Roadhouse, we full-fledged converted that into a sizzler, pretty much. You order with the cashier and then somebody just drops it off. You know, so there was no service. Was there extra problems with that? Yeah, a lot. Like, did people like it as much? No, it's not anywhere close to as good without it. But that's what happens when you kind of get on this flat wage system. You know, service is going to be slower because there's nobody incentivized to make it faster.
And, you know,
and you mentioned, Tricia, that like getting paid, like part of why people left is because, like I love the fact that I got to make high end accountant money. But when less people started coming in, when government started shutting down stuff, when people are afraid to go out, well, then all of a sudden I'm making less tip money and I would need a positive environment to keep me there. And a lot of these places did not have that to fall back on.
Yeah. Well, with one thing about being tipped too, generally people look at it as percentage, although sometimes they'll just do it as, you know, I'm giving this flat amount or whatever. And I am one person that always appreciates a tip if it's given, like not to be like a slap in my face, or I very much appreciate people tipping me, and most people are great.
Yeah.
Now there's a lot of inflation. I think like right now it's so funny. I was reading, it was a meme, but it's true because I work at a place that sells a lot of wings. A lot of places, their chicken wings are market price. They can't put a price on the menu right now. I mean, it's ridiculously inflated. Like our oil is twice as what it used to be. So, you know, we obviously have to raise menu prices. The good thing as a tipped employee, it means that I'm not going to stay at a flat wage. My tip will go up. You know what I mean? So I have to pay for things that are more expensive now too. Therefore, I'm going to be making more money because obviously if your bill used to be $30 and it's $40, I'm going to make that percentage difference.
Yep.
Which is unfortunate for the customer. But again, if you want to pay for service, then that would be something that you have to go out initially and consider when you're going out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that, but it's also frustrating because I get a lot of people complaining about it. You know, well, these prices, and I say it, unfortunately, you know, she tried to hold them down as long as she could, but it's just, you know, that's the way it is. Some people don't believe you. Most people understand that. And also just shortages, you know, I'll go into work right now. I don't know what beer we have. We don't have a beer wine list anymore because we can't get half of it.
Yeah. Beer's a toughie. Liquors, and you order meat, and it helps if you're a busy restaurant, because you can know that anything you order too much of will be gone at least the next day, because you'll sell it. But yeah, local places, man, that is such a tough, you know, sometimes you'll get a party coming in and they all want burgers, and you just sold 50 burgers, and you're like, well, I made 70 patties for the day. Is 20 going to get us through the rest of the night? Yeah. You know, and,
that's what we see a lot with chicken wings right now. I mean, it's just, I don't know what it is about that. I'm sure it has to do a lot with the meat processing facilities and what they went through, but so people are pretty pissed off about their chicken wings. That's another thing. Your server does not determine the menu price, people. Like, nothing to do with it.
Yeah, we wish. Yeah. Is some stuff not worth it? You know what? You should ask your server what's worth it on the menu and what's not, you know?
I generally honestly answer that too. And I don't know if I always feel good about that, but it's like, you ask me a question, I'm gonna tell you the truth. No, you're not gonna like the teriyaki. It's not good.
Yeah, I mean, or even just the best like value picks. Like, is this worth it? And I can be like, you know, this I love the menu at Texas Roadhouse. The chicken fried steak is not good. I mean, that's just, that's baked into it. That's the type of cut that is used.
Texas Roadhouse to sue Hody John.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I love almost everything about it, but if somebody's like, am I going to be happy with that? I'd be like, you know what? Probably not for the price that it's at, you know, what you might be happy with. And then I'll give you some of those, you know, and it's, and your server generally knows what do people leave that they're happy with? What do they leave that they're not happy with? Now, of course, reservers, we want to sell big ticket stuff. I want you to order the porterhouse, but if you're not happy with the porterhouse and I recommend it, then all of a sudden my tip is tied to it. So, I mean, for me as a server, I always want to do what's right for the guest if my tip is tied to it. Mm-hmm. So it's a really great question to ask your server, because they know then, as opposed to just, hey, I'm going to try to sell you the big thing. Hey, guess what the special is today? Yeah. Instead, say like, well, what are your favorite things on the menu? What do you think the best value on the menu is? And that really gets them to understand that, hey, you're tying your tip to this recommendation. And I think that that's it's a smart way to go about it, you know, because that way, you know that those two are linked and you're going to get an actual honest recommendation as opposed to just the most pricey thing out there.
You were talking about steaks, Hody, and I think that we just have to talk about this, okay? This
is really
important. And we'll do it in honor of Dale, a friend of the We Are Libertarians Network.
Cheers, Dale.
it depends. So what kind of cut you get right now? I know that depends on what you can't get as a restaurant. However, I went, and I'm going to name this place because it's a chain and I don't feel like they're going to die. It was Fleming's. It's a upscale steakhouse. It's the first time I ever went. We went out for my husband's birthday, like a date night. Now, I eat keto most of the time. And so I love a good steak. Obviously that hits a lot of my macros. And their steak is, you just pay for the piece. Everything's a la carte. Obviously it was a $50 New York strip steak. It was probably the worst steak.
Your picture of it wrecked my mood. It was so bad.
And I was gracious about it. And, you know, the service was good. She didn't suffer. The manager came over and everything. But I just thought that it's got to be that they don't have enough cooks and nobody's trained, because you can't charge that. But then we went to a local place. My steak, which actually came, this was a place that served it with, you know, a salad and a potato, over which I got the green beans, but it was $35 and it was the most beautiful, tender, brilliantly cooked steak. The service was just as good. And so sometimes I feel like it's not necessarily the server's fault, or it's not necessarily how nice the restaurant is. It's the one dude on the line cooking who probably didn't go to culinary school, if I'm going to be honest.
People. No, I mean, and I didn't either. And I've had to cut them before myself. And now you and I are both New York strip people.
Yes.
Whoop, whoop.
My favorite cut.
It is the best mix of tenderness and flavor that there is. You know, the straight ribeye people.
I can't do that. I mean, I'll eat it and I'll enjoy it, but I can't. And then filet, I like it too. But at the same time, I'm like, I need a little more fat. you know?
Yeah. You know, right. So the concept is that there's a rendering process, right? Mm-hmm. The fat turns to kind of a buttery consistency, right? And I have yet to see a ribeye that isn't way beyond well done, where the fat is actually rendered down to butter. It's usually too thick or hard to do it, you know? You maybe could do it with a really thin cut, but it's just a chunk. It's a section. And I you know what, if you like the ribeye and you like that section and you like that,
if you
hard
like
fat,
gristle and you have no taste and you're not an American, I mean, that's fine. We're fine with that. We're individuals. We're libertarians. You go ahead and just be really bad at choosing steak.
You do what you like. Yeah. You know, whereas the sirloin, you know, obviously that's got like the least fat content and it gets, you know, kind of hard as a result of that. Filet is easily the most tender, but you said, there's not always enough, you know, fat in there to really justify.
I like to add a nice buttery sauce to the top of it if I make a filet. That's really
right.
Good. Yeah.
Right. Whereas strip, you know, the strip obviously got the fat on the one side, and, you know, you probably shouldn't eat that, but if you do, that's fine too. Depends on how thick they leave that on. If it's thin, then it's, you don't even notice it. You know, if they leave it on real thick, then whatever.
My steak at Fleming's, I noticed it. Everybody in the restaurant noticed it.
Everybody on Facebook
could have had its own seat in the restaurant.
That was the most. I mean, I think the problem with yours is the great part about the New York strip is the fat in it is just enough that it melts nicely when you cook it.
And I got it medium rare. I didn't go rare. I wouldn't go rare on a New York
strip. They didn't pretty much. I to say they cooked it is almost an insult to cooking, but yours was blue.
Yes.
And the fact that I was, you know, the fat on the one side, fine, but it was the fat all in the middle that still hadn't rendered down yet. And I was like, that is so thin. Like, even if you do it regular rare, that's going to melt. So you just got something. Yeah. I know some people call it blue. I just call it a health hazard. I mean, that's just gross.
I think so too. Yeah. And I don't know. At that point, I can taste the fact that it's not cooked. It's not like having a warm red center. It's like I should be eating steak tartare, which I wouldn't, because obviously that would have some acid on it to make it.
Anyway, all this is a cooking process, you know, and everybody will like it a little bit differently. You know, there's a cooking thing that happens when you cook meat. You're looking at chemical compounds that are changing, that are, you know, based on heat. It absolutely is something. Milk's a tough one. If you use milk or cream in like a gravy, that's when you got to watch out for, because like as soon as it's if you've heated to the point of boiling, those compounds have broken to the point where it's going to be a weaker gravy. And meat goes through kind of the same process. There's a magic space that usually everybody has it, usually between well and rare. If you want a pure raw, like the tartare, like you said, that's not cooked. But they do something else to make that edible.
Yes.
So when you're doing like a blue steak, I don't get it, because it's not acidic. You just didn't do enough of the thing that adds flavor to it.
And I think we've all gone to a restaurant and got the wrong temperature steak. So that's not the worst thing, you know? And it was funny. We were also talking just like on things in the service industry. People might not know, sending a steak back to refire and stuff isn't actually the biggest loss a restaurant gets. Mm-mm. It's your damn ranch dressing, people. We charge for ranch. People get mad. I'm like, this isn't free. You can't get 66 buckets of dressing for free.
It's all sauces. Most expensive thing, the biggest thing in the waste column is sauce. Absolutely right. Yeah.
And ranch has become a new ketchup. Ketchup to me is just the most disgusting thing that's ever existed. But if you don't have any taste, I'm a voluntarist. So you go ahead and have four tastes.
I feel like you and I have very similar taste buds, because I'm like ketchup. I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
Sugar vegetable?
Yeah.
I don't want this.
What it is.
Yeah, I don't want that. That's a bitter sugar vegetable.
Like I'm not even a huge barbecue person, but I can do a barbecue, like a vinegary barbecue. I can get down with that if I was eating carbs.
I love barbecue.
Yeah,
ketchup is a big no for me. I actually don't even use it as a base in my barbecue sauce. But if you like it, fine. Some people add so much ranch dressing to like a salad. I'm like, do you have taste buds? Like, can you really not taste ranch until you have that much ranch on it?
Also, like, there's a difference between Johnny Marzetti ranch and a homemade ranch at a steakhouse. That's good. Like a peppercorn ranch. That's good. You'll need a little bit.
Ranch is one that's hard to get right. And that is one hats off to the people that have a homemade recipe, or the restaurants that have a homemade recipe that get it right. It can be a toughie. I will say that. And you are just mostly mixing stuff together. But to get it to the point, you know, I think ranch is always on the edge of gross.
Yes.
Because you got
it can be.
Mayonnaise and like sour cream, and you're just, and you know,
and if it stays out too long, it kind of looks like gelatin.
Yeah. You keep it at room temp for a while, and yeah, all of a sudden that thing gets gnar. But yeah, it's wonderful. I love ranch dressing. It's probably, I guess it's one of my favorite dressings, but yeah, it's very easy to get wrong. And a bad ranch, I find that there are a couple of foods that make me not want to eat that kind of food for a long time. If I have ranch dressing that's not good, I will pass on ranch for like a calendar year.
Yeah.
Until I'm like psychologically ready to have some again. Well,
I think the best ones, this really is a show about whatever we want it to be about, but it's fun. Yeah. That's what I love about On the Run. But
we're on the run.
Yeah. But as far as being keto, I always look at, you know, obviously carbohydrate content. Ranches that have too much sugar are gross. You know what I mean? I think that's the key. It gives this like sweet taste in your mouth that it shouldn't.
Yep.
It shouldn't be sweet. It should be creamy.
Everybody has, you know, we talk about the steak, that, you know, the consistency and the flavor that they like on their palate. Everybody's going to have a sugar tolerance. Now, one of the things that I love about barbecue is that it hits every flavor of every area of the tongue, right? And that's that's more people, culinary artists should see that, you know. And then it's like, hey, you know, why does salt work with caramel? Well, yeah. It's not that salt is actually the flavor you usually think of or want when you have something sweet, but it helps it get more over your whole palate. And so you enjoy
it, Cody.
Right? Yes. Right. And so you're trying to hit all these different areas of the palate. And sugar is one I find just a little bit goes a long way. You get a little bit sugar, you're going to get that front of the tongue. I mean, it's the first thing you taste, the front of the tongue, the sweet part, right? And so like, if I get it there, I'm like, okay, I got it. When people keep adding sugar to like, and like you said, there are ranch dressings that are sugared.
Yeah, you don't eat sugar in your ranch dressing.
I got it. You put a half a teaspoon in a gallon and you are beyond good. Yeah. And some of these recipes will be like, now throw a cup in there.
Yeah.
It's like, can you really not taste the sweet? Is that what it takes for you?
I think a lot, like the American diet has, we're so addicted to sugar in a lot of ways, which I don't, you know, I'm personally not one of those people that's like, keto's the only way. I think if you're going to have sugar, you make a cake, you put some real freaking sugar in it and you have your, you know what I mean?
Well, the FDA for the longest time, I mean, they even had like public service announcements asking you to pass up on a steak and get ice cream instead.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is, you know, because of sugar buyouts and corporate interests and stuff that we had going on behind the scenes.
The government would never do that, Hody. They always want to do what's best for us. It's never about making money. Those people are public servants. They probably go to bed at night worrying about our families.
Right. Yeah. And I wonder why everybody, you know, walks around looking like, you know, from that era, looking like, you know, Rutherford B. Hayes, or, you know, and why getting stuck in the bathtub was a big problem when the FDA was recommending all this sugar in your diet. And it's like, guys, why did the diabetes become such a problem? Yeah. I'm just like, you're walking around, you just kind of look, everybody's just kind of looks like a little bit of a, like a little bit of a like clown outfit with the fake hula hoop under there.
Yeah. And also kind of like they might be a corpse. They're a little too animated to be one, but they've got that gray look to their face.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And they're like, I mean, they're like, check out Teddy Roosevelt, like the most fit dude of his time. And I'm just like, I don't know. He looks, I'm skinnier than Teddy is. Was he the most fit dude of his time? Like, I'm not necessarily ripped right now, but I look better than Teddy. And they're like, well, at the time they were really heavy on sugar, and unfortunately it's still not entirely.
When I feel bad about myself, Hody, I just look in the mirror and I think, damn girl, you look so much better than Teddy Roosevelt.
That's right. And he was considered really hot.
Yeah.
You know, and like, so like for me, I'm just like, you know what? If I was just born 120 years earlier, people would be all over.
Yes. They'd be pawing at you.
Right. It's me. I got Teddy on one side, Woodrow Wilson on the other. And all of a sudden, Hody doesn't look so bad. You know?
Also, politically speaking.
Well, yeah, that too.
I mean, yes. You know, socialism is cancer, I suppose.
I didn't manage to kill a bunch of people and create a department that recommended sugar over meat.
Yes.
That's good for me. I am not doing so bad. Yeah. I don't know. I know we're kind of a little bit off the subject to serving.
We are, but it was fun. Now I'm looking at the clock and I'm realizing I never took a mid-show break, but that's okay. So I thought we might wrap up with a couple of stories.
Mm.
If you have one, maybe a good heartwarming story about the service industry, maybe something you've experienced lately or something you want to share with people about when they go out.
Yeah. I mean, I guess heartwarming for me, when I, you know, my life kind of fell off the rails a little bit. You know, when I went through my little crisis and divorce and everything, it's funny looking back on it because I'm so grateful for it. But at the time I thought it was terrible. And I was just so sad and depressed. And I just remember being scared of everything. Just, am I going to make enough money? Because I'm a homeowner, I'm a car owner. All of a sudden I went from paying these things together to me paying these things by myself. You know, am I going to be able to make it? I wasn't going to do it at the bank. And I was like, oh man, I wonder if I could do it as a server. I remember making decent money at Applebee's. Hopefully I still make good money now. And I just remember finishing the first week and I put all the money in a jar at the end of the night, counting the jar. And I just got tears in my eyes and I was just so grateful. And I was like, I'm going to be okay. Cause I can do this. Like, and this is, and you know, it's hard to think about it this way, but this is something I wasn't going to survive a banker's salary for, but I was going to survive on a server salary. And it's just, you know, and so like with all these horror stories and terrible people and racists and weird hours and working on holidays, of course there are drawbacks. Absolutely. But if you've got a little bit of a personality and you have big dreams, and or maybe you're in a place like I was where you just say, maybe it's like I got kids to support and things are kind of overwhelming me right now. And I am so far away from an $80,000, $100,000 a year job. But I have this lifestyle that has needs like I have an $80,000, $100,000 year job. Serving probably is not your worst answer.
Right.
It's a great one. I mean, and with the weird hours, most people are so grateful to have them right now that you can just walk in and say, here's the shifts I can work and they'll give it to you.
Yeah. The market is letting the worker demand and they'll take it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I literally work, well, I'll pick up other shifts too, you know, obviously call us, but I work one day a week set. I asked for that. I got it. You know, that's not common. So.
Yeah, it's, you know, you make friends, you get regulars, you get, you know, the friendships you have with your fellow servers. It's a tough one to replace because it's almost like you got war stories. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been in a Golden Corral that's open on Thanksgiving and or the, you know, Veterans Day with the free meals or whatever. And you're just like,
oh, no kidding. They did that.
Yeah. You're just this is going to be wild, you know, like this is gonna get wild. And you kind of look at each other at the end of the night, and some people, of course, since the meals were free, people decided not to tip. And some people, you know, got $100 on three different tables, so they made 300 plus their tips for the rest of the night. And you laugh and you tell these stories, but you really do develop you're legitimately in the trenches with your fellow service people. And, you know, you were talking about how like you had a bar and the high tops. I know Jamie had this happen frequently, but people would just, they'd be like, well, it's open seating at the bar, but they would sit at a dirty table and then be like, this table's dirty. It's like, yeah, open seating doesn't mean sit at a dirty table. They're all clean.
Yes.
It means find one that's open, right?
I'll just go grab the one dish guy that we kept during the pandemic that's also answering the phones and delivering pizzas. He'll be happy to come out and clean this in the middle of a shift.
Right. If I could just share anything, just try to understand what they're going through. Look, if you have a legitimately bad, I think that there's a lot of people are afraid to not, or to talk about times they didn't tip a bad server. Hey, if you got bad service and it's legitimately the server's fault, do not tip.
There's been times I've royally screwed up and I did not expect. I put things back twice because my head was, I was so crazed and busy or whatever. Yep. I don't expect somebody to tip me for giving them crap.
Have you pocketed an order before? Forgot to ring it in? 30 minutes later, yes. You're like, where is that damn food?
And you know how good cooks like that when you come up and they're busy and you're like, can you do me the biggest favor? And they look at you like, I don't care if you go out there and they murder you.
Yeah.
I've got all this food to cook. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Can you bump mine to the front? And you're like, yes. Dude, this is going to make all these tickets messed up. And you're like, well, can you do it for me?
I do. Did they generally do, though? Because I always try to, you know, that's another thing about working in that kind of industry. I try to throw something back. If they make a mistake on my food, I'm not going to bitch at them. You know what I mean? I'm like, it's fine. Just refire. I don't need to say anything. I am not at all
fluent, but I speak just enough Spanish to make the kitchen like me. Yeah. And that is that has been critical on some of these errors that I have made. But if something like that happens, you know, and you know what? Now, Trisha, you and I have also talked before how sometimes you get bigger tips when something wrong occurs because it's an opportunity. It creates an opportunity for you to say, like, here's what I'm going to do as a server to take care of this problem. But if, you know, if you're just feeling like it was generally poor performance, like I said, I've had it before. Don't pay. Yeah. This is the best part. And this is why, like, I wish they would do this with more professions. Like, can you imagine athletes? Like, if you struck out four times looking in one ball game and that was your stat line, if you're just like, you know what, fans, that one's on me. Like, don't even pay for that ticket. Like, you don't pay for the ticket until you sit down. And that's when you start shelling out the butts when people are hitting home. All of a sudden those athletes are starting to work out a little bit more now. Right. Like, and there's no doubt that incentive just creates this big, you know, better performance and better product.
Well, that's why I'm a fan of Austrian economics and it makes a lot of sense. You know what I mean?
I do wish there was some way to get the cooks in on it too. Yeah. I think I would love it if there's some way that the cooking process and the serving process was tipped.
In our kitchen, we do a huge carry out. So there are a lot of tips and they split them between the entire kitchen. Mm,
good.
So, you know what I mean? They do at the end of the night. I know my daughter used to work there and at the end of the night and they're making good, you know, wages.
Yeah.
So at the end of the night, they usually would each get at least $20-$25. That's pretty good if you're making $15, $16, $17 an hour. So
yeah, totally. Yeah. Good. Good.
I wanted to share as I'm closing out here, my good story here. I had somebody this week, two guys, they're from Belarus. So like, you know, they speak Russian. I had them forever. And I'd had a couple bad weeks just because we didn't have the normal people got scared and they were sick and, you know, Omicron and then just bad weather and things like that. So financially, I hadn't had a couple, you know, they come in, oh, you had your baby, you know, this and that. And I hadn't seen them since I was pregnant behind the bar. Very nice. They drink Guinness and Irish whiskey, which always makes me laugh. And they had arm wrestling contests with the other, you know, patron. It was quite a fun night. And at the end of the night, he says, give me your hand. And he puts a cash tip in my hand, which is I remember they always tip me cash. And he tipped me well over $100 on an $80 tab. Yeah. And that was just like, you know what? That made up for what I missed last week. It was fun. He kept the other people engaged, which everybody having fun, you know, they tip more too. And so and I'm not saying you have to do that, but boy, if you ever have the opportunity just to do that, I've done that kind of thing before, like Christmas time, whatever. It's just a real blessing for somebody in that industry. And it makes them remember why they're cleaning tampons out of the bathroom. Yeah.
It'll put tears of joy in your eyes. No joke. It might be $100 that you were just going to spend on the next mobile game or, you know, and if you need to keep it. But if it is something that you just say, you know, I've got a little extra right now and I'm in the mood to share, few people will appreciate that like your server does.
Yeah. So on that note, I want to end on a high note there. And, I wanted to say, y'all pray for Remzo. I'm sure he will be back soon. I don't believe he's missing any shows because he's a workaholic. But in the meantime, you can find, if you go to wearelibertarians.com, which is the network we're all on, you can find Hody's show, Enemy My Enemy. You can find some of my Ginger Archie archives. You can find the main show, Chris Spangle show, all kinds of good stuff. You can also, it'll link to over to Remzo's site so you can follow all his projects. And thank you so much for listening. Y'all have a lovely day.